Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Divide, our podcast series that deals with separate but also regional issues. My name is Robert Faustmann. I'm the director of the Office of the Friedrich Ebert Foundation here in Cyprus. We do this podcast in collaboration with the Peace Research Institute Oslo, PRIO, but also with the Climate Project of the Ebert Foundation, which is located in Amman. Our topic today is the migration crisis in the Eastern Mediterranean, with a special focus also on the migration issue in Cyprus. But it's regional with a local, in a way, outlet. And we have an eminent expert amongst us. And eminent and eminent goes very well together, and that's a bad joke. But nevertheless, eminent. I can't believe how bad that was. Anyway, eminent. Is assistant professor and head of the Department of International Relations in the World Peace University in Nicosia. She researches extensively energy and geopolitics in the Mediterranean region. And in that context, she works on a number of projects with PRIO and FES that resulted in 5 reports. This is the last podcast presenting those reports. This one is about migration. Hello, Emine. Warm welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. Hello. Good night, then.
Günaydın, of course. I should practice my non-existent Turkish on you. You're on the report, and that's why we're talking here. And the title of the report is a call for a collaborative humanitarian assistance agenda amidst current migration crisis in the East Med. Let's unpack this. Yeah. So you're talking about several very dire and problematic developments in the Eastern Mediterranean in context of migration. Can you just give us a picture? What is the situation as far as migration in the East Med is concerned?
Certainly. I mean, this is what I really aim to do, to provide a picture in the first place with regards to how dire the situation is really in the Eastern Mediterranean. And although I'm working more on energy and geopolitics, one of the basically areas in which I also focus on is security and human security in the region. So with this report, the aim of me providing 5 different vignettes at the beginning of the report was actually really, as you said, to unpack, even in the beginning, to begin with, unpack the situation, so to say, that we are surrounded, the situation that we find ourselves in the Eastern Mediterranean in the context of security, human security. Let's delve into the complex tapestry of challenges, therefore, unfolding in the Eastern Mediterranean region. I call a nexus of climate crisis, humanitarian crisis, security issues, involving everything from water, energy, health. So with this report, I really aim to come up with a more holistic understanding of all these security threats. So what are the situations that we're seeing when we have a look at the region right now? We have witnessed the devastating impact of climate change, of course, exemplified mostly, more recently, by Storm Daniel's transformation into a medicane, bringing severe flooding to Greece, Bulgaria, Turkey. And this event is really, to me, a stark reminder of the escalating severity of climate-induced disasters in the region. Even a recent study further highlights that, revealing that global warming has dramatically increased the likelihood of deadly rainfall events in places like Libya. So we should expect even more. And there is an ongoing refugee crisis, of course. Since 2011, over 5.6 million Syrians have sought refugees, even more than that, much more than that, refugees in neighboring countries. They're straining resources and intensifying the challenges for host communities at the same time. So this situation is even compounded by the conflict in Ukraine, adding even a further layer to an already complex displacement crisis in the region. And a very critical, yet I believe often overlooked aspect of this crisis is energy access. So, for example, have a look at refugee camps. Only a very tiny percentage of residents in refugee camps have access to reliable energy. This shortage certainly hampers basic daily activities, and it poses significant safety risks, particularly for women and girls. And health crisis, it's another alarming consequence. For example, in 2023, the region saw a surge in disease outbreaks up to that point, nearly doubling from 2 years prior. And these outbreaks are closely linked to the aftermath of natural disasters and conflicts in the region. This also highlights to me the urgent need for resilient public health systems. Lastly, last but not least, I would say, the dangerous journeys of migrants seeking safety across the Mediterranean, of course, is heart-wrenching. And this year alone, about 289 children, they lost their lives or went missing on these very difficult roads. And I've already mentioned the migration. I've already provided the outlook of migration. But this part, this vignette, is even beyond that. For example, we see that often those who survive, they face harsh conditions in overcrowded detention facilities with limited access to essentials like clean water. So we, at most of the time, focus on people who lost their lives and people who made it or can't make it, obviously, alongside this quite dangerous roads. But even for those who manage to survive, they come up with, for example, one bottle of water, half liter of bottle of water daily in camps, overcrowded, basically, facilities. So these scenarios, they paint a picture to me of a region grappling with interlinked challenges of migration, not only migration. So this report is not merely about migration. It is about migration, energy, water, health, actually almost all aspects of human security crisis that we're facing, and in other words, humanitarian crisis that we're facing in the region. So they're not isolated issues. They're interconnected crises. They cross national boundaries. They demand a comprehensive multi-sectoral approach. And understanding these links to me is so crucial for addressing the region's complex human security needs and mitigating potential risks to host societies at the same time. So this is the main idea, if you like, behind picturing all these dire conditions, dire developments in the Eastern Mediterranean at the beginning of my report.
Not a pleasant picture, unsurprisingly so. Been made worse by climate change, as you mentioned. What is done about? What are the current fragmented efforts in addressing both the migration but also security issues that the countries are facing and that the migrants are facing?
Well, I mean, climate change is increasingly recognized, of course, as a threat multiplier. We know that by now. Intensifying existing challenges, it certainly contributes to the complexity of migration patterns. The region has been already a hotspot for climate-induced disasters, with over 1.5 million cases of internal displacement in the last decade only, predominantly due to flooding. So this displacement, of course, were not just a result of immediate environmental factors, but also they were indirectly affected by consequences of climate change, such as food insecurity, or economic instability, or crises or problems relating to energy security, or in other words, energy insecurity. For instance, the 2010 heat wave in Russia, leading to a failure in grain harvest, indirectly, it is believed and it is cited that, indirectly contributed to the Arab Spring uprisings, simply by escalating food prices, highlighting how climate events can have far-reaching impact. So as the region, therefore, grapples with all these challenges, so we see efforts to address migration and security issues in isolation from one another, but this approach is increasingly becoming inadequate. The situation in Cyprus is a very good example in this context because we see high number of asylum seekers and undocumented migrants really creating significant administrative and humanitarian challenges and crises for Cyprus. And in this context, for example, we see the Republic of Cyprus being actively involved in managing these challenges with the assistance from European Commission, for example, or various EU agencies. So to me, this emphasizes really the need for even greater comprehensive and coordinated approach. However, the current efforts, they often overlook the interconnected nature of these crises. Migrants reaching their destinations, they face barriers in accessing basic services like electricity, water, healthcare. This further complicates their integration, and the host country's response strategies are further being much, much more complicated as a result of basically those really interconnected, so to say, crises. So climate change, yes, it's a threat multiplier in the context of migration, and it certainly demands a more integrated approach. Interdependencies should be recognized among migration, climate change, and security challenges that I've addressed basically in the rest of the report.
You're big on emphasizing the interconnectedness of various issues like migration and how it relates to energy, water, and health issues. Are there specific policies and strategic solutions in place, or at least would you recommend some? I think you alluded to it already in your previous intervention, to address these multifaceted issues.
Absolutely. I mean, let's start with the migration and energy nexus. A mere 10% of refugees, for example, have access to basic electricity. This highlights the urgent need for more sustainable energy solutions in humanitarian settings. And initiatives like the Moving Energy Initiative and the SAFE, which means Safe Access to Fuel and Energy, initiated by UNHCR, they're really steps in the right direction, I believe. But of course, more integrated efforts are needed. This includes ramping up, for example, funding for energy projects in refugee camps and incorporating energy considerations, for example, into national and global plans, which takes into consideration, if you like, the needs, energy needs of those people who are in move. Turning to the migration and health nexus, the focus is on enhancing healthcare access for displaced populations, of course, here. The strengthening health systems in host countries is very crucial, as is ensuring that those populations, mobile populations, can access healthcare regardless of their legal status. Because we know that public health measures, especially those addressing climate change-induced risks like vector-borne diseases, are so vital. And in the context of water scarcity, we see ensuring access to clean water and sanitation is not just a necessity, but a fundamental human right, of course. UNHCR's WASH initiatives, for example, are cases in point here. A WASH is a collective term for water, sanitation, and hygiene, which also shows us the interconnected nature of health, water in this context. While each is a separate field of work, they are interdependent and help keep refugees healthy. And in this context, of course, to be able to run all these facilities, for example, healthcare facilities, you need electricity. So none of us can really, if you like, underestimate the interlinked nature of all these issue areas, all these fundamental human rights, which boils down to, at some point, talking about humanitarian assistance and human security, basically threats in Cyprus and in the broader region. So we know, therefore, that without safe water, refugees are exposed to diseases and infections. And these, of course, without soap, for example, or other hygiene products, of course, we know that pathogens can spread in households and communities at large. So, I mean, my aim with this report, at least, was to really provide a larger, much larger picture of how and what should be our focus while talking about basically threats in today's context, security threats in the context of Cyprus and in the Eastern Mediterranean. And given the scale of the influx of basically, you know, the movement of people, the scale of refugee crisis in the region, I think these are really alarming topics. These are really alarming, so to say, parts and crises that we need to really focus on.
One of the threats that goes through this report, but I think also links the other reports you wrote for us, is your strong support for regional cooperation. How in this context could regional cooperation lead to effective solutions for the security concerns that affect migrants and refugees in the Eastern Mediterranean and our beloved island of Cyprus?
Well, I believe it is indeed necessary to ask how regional cooperation can lead to more effective solutions in this context. And this is especially pertinent, in my understanding, in the context of Cyprus as a key player, we understand, in this complex scenario simply as a tiny island divided, receiving high number of refugees each year. So firstly, I believe regional cooperation can facilitate the sharing of resources and expertise. So countries like Cyprus, for example, facing high asylum applications can certainly benefit immensely from collaborative efforts in resource allocation, technical assistance, capacity building. And this cooperation can lead to more efficient use of resources, avoiding duplication of efforts, for example, and ensuring that aid reaches those who need it most. And secondly, regional cooperation allows for the development of unified policies and strategies. So by working together, countries can create more comprehensive framework, obviously, that addresses even the root causes of migration at some point and the challenges faced by refugees, which has been obviously the main focus of my report. So this includes coordinated approaches to border management, asylum processing, and integration of refugees into host community at the later stages. So without, I believe, cooperation, even at the regional level, these are issues which would be very difficult to be addressed in isolation by each and every receiving community. And thirdly, cooperation, I believe, enhances the ability to respond, again, linked to my migration health nexus, public health emergencies. So we have experienced the COVID-19 pandemic, right? And it has shown us the importance of coordinated public health strategies. So in this context of refugees and migrants, to me, this means ensuring access to healthcare, sanitation, clean water, irrespective of their legal status, irrespective of the individual's legal status. And this also requires cooperation. And I mean, we can also argue that cooperation at the regional level can lead to better environmental management as well, crucial in addressing issues like water scarcity and energy needs that I addressed in my previous reports. So by collaborating on sustainable practices and technologies, therefore, countries can also help mitigating the environmental impact of large migrant populations that they receive. So this is also another side of the picture that we usually avoid to see. We don't want to see, but it is there. And in Cyprus, I mean, coming back to Cyprus from this regional perspective, with its unique geopolitical situation, I believe, I mean, with its geopolitical context, of course, it's very beneficial for Cyprus to take part in any regional cooperation relating to migration flows and managing migration flows better. This is essential for Cyprus, I believe. The island's divided nature means that addressing those challenges, migration and refugee security related challenges, it's not easy in this context. And in conclusion, I mean, I believe regional cooperation in the Eastern Mediterranean is really key to developing effective, sustainable solutions for any security challenge that we would face, including migrants and refugees, not from the perspective of obviously only by states facing those challenges for their state security. Of course, I adopted more human security perspective in this report, so I think it's equally, obviously, it's equally important, needless to stress, that it's equally important to also address the challenges faced by migrants and refugees in this larger picture. So we should pool resources, obviously, harmonize policies, work together towards common goals. Countries like Cyprus can benefit most, I believe, from such a larger regional migration governance perspective, from a collaborative approach as such at the regional level.
Next to regional cooperation, you're big on a holistic approach to the issues of migration, energy, water, and health, how they connect in a separate context, and are there policies in place at both sides of the divided island to address these complex and varied issues in relation to human security?
I mean, obviously unpacking such diverse array of topics, issues, wasn't an easy task in the first place. And I really tried my best to really shove the nexus, as I said, the challenges of all these different issue areas, shared challenges, the interconnectedness of all these different sort of crises. And it wasn't it was equally difficult task to narrow it down to Cyprus and to show people, especially policymakers in Cyprus, how important it is basically to put in place better policies, better coordinated policies to address these interconnected security, regional security challenges, and to understand that it's so relevant in our Cypriot context. So focusing on Cyprus means looking at a divided island, at the crossroads of significant migration flows, grappling, as I said earlier, with complex challenges. In Cyprus, the issue of migration is affecting, obviously, both sides of the divide. Both the Republic of Cyprus and the northern part, they're both experiencing an influx of migrants and refugees. This influx puts a strain on resources, their resources, including energy, water, healthcare. In the Republic of Cyprus, facilities, for example, like Porinara Reception Center, based on my recent research, I understand that it's overwhelmed, housing far more people than intended. This overcapacity leads to challenges in providing consistent access to energy and clean water in those, for example, in particular in the reception center in Porinara, essential for human well-being, of course. These are access to energy, access to clean water, access to drinking water, sufficient amount of drinking water. These are human rights, we understand. They're essential for human well-being. And they are under strains in the reception center at the moment in Nicosia. On the health front, the situation is equally challenging. The influx of migrants, this requires robust health services, but the strain on resources make it, again, very difficult to provide comprehensive care. Again, this is evident in the Porinara Center, because there are limited freedom of movement at the same time. Extended confinement contribute to various health issues among people residing there. In the northern part of Cyprus, the situation is a little bit of different, but it's equally complex. The lack of international recognition, international recognition, the unrecognition in other terms, results in limited obligations towards irregular migrants in the north. And this leads to practices like detention and swift deportation of these individuals, making it even more challenging to apply a comprehensive human security framework as I did for the Republic of Cyprus. I mean, with this, trying to understand the extent to which people can get access to electricity, clean water, or healthcare services. The absence of such an established system for asylum status further complicates, obviously, provision of fundamental services for the people who are in urgent need of these services. So, despite, therefore, these challenges, there are efforts on both sides to address these issues. Republic of Cyprus, in the Republic of Cyprus, the European Commission has very recently allocated approximately 67 million euros, part of which is intended for creating a new reception center. We understand this funding aims to improve infrastructure and services for migrants, of course, including better access to energy, water, and healthcare. In the north, while the challenges are distinct, as I said, efforts like the provisional protection letters by the UNHCR offer more temporary relief, granting access to jobs, healthcare, and education for refugees. But we can talk about a reception center in the north. So people who would actually be lucky enough to get this protection letter by UNHCR, and there are actually almost hundreds, 113, I believe. Numbers can be checked, obviously. Exact numbers, I mean. But it shows that those people, obviously, they reside in, we host them they're residing in community. There are no reception centers, as I said, like the Porinara, but those people also struggle in meeting their basic needs like energy, water, and healthcare. So we still have therefore fundamental problem of lacking those services for the people in the north as well. So this is just a call, another call again for collaborative strategic approach to me, to see how people suffer, how people basically can't get access to humanitarian aid at the moment in which they must need it, urgently need it. And therefore, I believe that this is a very critical moment for Cyprus, with the opportunity to lead a paradigm shift in addressing these complex issues through more bicommunal collaborative approaches. And this is how I relate, so to say, this complex interconnected challenges to the Cypriot context.
And you related in very concrete terms. You suggest an establishment of a bicommunal rapid response committee to address these challenges. How could this such a committee operate? What role can the involvement of the United Nations, EU entities, and local stakeholders play in developing comprehensive strategies?
Well, I believe such an initiative, this is one of the proposals I have at the end of my report, given the problems and challenges, issues faced basically in both sides of the divide. I believe such an initiative would aim at addressing, in the first place, of course, the immediate challenges posed by migration influxes. So a collaborative effort between Greek and Turkish Cypriot communities, possibly with the involvement of the United Nations, would represent a significant step, I believe, towards, if you like, a unified approach to humanitarian assistance on the island. So the committee's structure, compromising, for example, representatives from both communities and official representing or appointed by the UNHCR, would reflect, I believe, a commitment to more inclusive and more balanced decision-making in the direction of creating more unified humanitarian assistance approach in Cyprus. So how could this committee operate effectively in practice? Well, the key lies in its ability to act swiftly, I believe, and decisively in response to urgent needs, urgent humanitarian needs. So by setting up, for example, temporary shelters equipped with essential services like electricity, clean water, and medical facilities, especially, of course, in areas with high migrant influxes, the committee can provide such an immediate relief. And these actions would be based on a more integrated human security governance approach addressing the interconnected issues of energy, water, and healthcare. Well, the involvement of UN and the EU entities, such as, for example, Director General for Migration and Home Affairs, the European Asylum Support Office, Frontex, this would also play a crucial role in this framework. So these bodies can bring expertise, resources, broader perspective, of course, and ensure the committee's strategies align with what is needed, if you like, really on the ground. And it is in line with standards and best practices internationally. And of course, local stakeholders, like including experts in crisis management, electricity and water infrastructure specialists, NGOs, civil society groups, of course, legal experts, social workers, healthcare providers, of course, are equally vital. We need their on-the-ground knowledge and experience in this context, and we certainly need to pull those resources together in the north and in the south, I believe. So for the committee to operate, therefore, effectively, it must foster open communication and trust, of course, among all parties. This includes regular meetings, transparent decision-making processes, a commitment, so to say, to address humanitarian crisis together. For anyone who would think of this topic in the context of Cyprus would say that, so these are problems relating to Republic of Cyprus, since the island is de facto divided, partitioned. So what is to do? I mean, the authorities in the north, they don't basically have any responsibility as an authority to address, for example, such problems that are occurring in the south. The same applies for the Republic of Cyprus for the north. But obviously, my starting point and the point that I end in this report has nothing to do with the legal, basically, responsibilities or authorities being responsible from a certain piece of territory in Cyprus. My starting point and where I am is more about our moral responsibilities. So in this tiny island, if we have these resources on the other side of the divide, why not to pull them together so that as humanity, we can help people who are in need, who arrives in Cyprus for one reason or another?
I think pulling resources together is an excellent bridge to my last question, because you suggest the creation of a reception center in the buffer zone between the two sites on the island. What advantages and challenges would this proposal present, and how could the joint governance from both communities contribute to a more effective resource allocation and international visibility of such a center?
Yeah, I mean, this is, of course, for many would be considered as a moral imagination. Maybe in my previous reports as well, you may see that while coming up with policy suggestions, I really want to keep that spirit in place. But of course, to come up with some doable empirical suggestions at the same time. So based on, again, this understanding, the mixture of my moral imagination and empirical evidences on the ground, I thought such an initiative, which would be characterized by joint governance of both communities in Cyprus, would represent a unique approach to managing migration influxes and humanitarian crisis in the region. So the location in the buffer zone is a very symbolic one for me. It's symbolic, it's significant because it stands as a natural ground, a space for cooperation and peace, making it an ideal location in my understanding for such an initiative. Such a center could serve as an ideal of hope and collaboration, not just for Cyprus, but also for other conflict-ridden parts of the world, I believe. Joint governance of the center by both communities is another significant advantage. It ensures the resources, as I said, pulling resources together financially, materially, human resources. These are very important. They have to be allocated more effectively, and more equitably in the context of Cyprus. So optimization of basically funds and materials can be another positive, basically another advantage of such an initiative, because it would then ensure that center operates efficiently and meets the needs of those it serves in the best way. And so this is a unique location, obviously. It can certainly attract global attention, I believe. So this could result in increased financial aid and specialized knowledge flowing into Cyprus, enhancing also its capacity to provide humanitarian assistance. So in my understanding, this can elevate Cyprus's international standing as a more proactive humanitarian actor, showcasing its commitments to more innovative solutions to complex regional challenges, basically security challenges. But having said that, we should admit, of course, some challenges relating to how such a center can be really actualized, can be built. So empirically speaking, as I said, this is not mere imagination. Empirically speaking, we need to, of course, understand the legal complexities of international law, Republic of Cyprus's legal framework, UN regulations in this context. So it's really, really crucial in that respect to have careful evaluation of the possibility of legal terms, how such a center can be set up and function properly without breaching any international law, any legal framework or any regulations in this context. So this is the joint governance basically aspect that I proposed in my report, therefore. Trust, open communication between Greek and Turkish Cypriot communities. Well, this will clearly also help in longer terms peace building, I believe, in Cyprus. So therefore, building a reception center as such, I think, offers such unique opportunities to address humanitarian needs on the one hand, and also to learn how to act together, how to collaborate in the face of such serious crisis, regional crisis unfolding in and around Cyprus. So international visibility, symbolic value, resource allocation, these are really the positive sides, I believe, of this proposal.
Well, our podcast, and this was no exception, follows the pattern of drawing a really depressing picture of either the situation in Cyprus and or the region, then a really competent analysis, and we end with some optimistic policy recommendations with some positive ways out. And I think that's what we should stick with. So let's hope that your policy recommendations are heard and we see an improvement in a very, very difficult situation. Emine, it was wonderful, as always. I say it now because you have become a routine partner in our podcast series. So it was a pleasure, as always. Thank you so much for your fantastic contribution. Really enjoyed our conversation. You can find the reports on the PRIO website, but also on our website, cyprus.fas.de, where you also find this podcast, and hopefully you have found this podcast. So thank you for listening. Thank you, Emine. Thank you so much. Goodbye.
You have a good day. Bye.